Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the studios of Teeing It Up in the swamps of Jersey, this is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, a special Wednesday edition, September 14th, the year 2016. Welcome inside our studios on this hot, humid, 88-degree night. We will be joined momentarily by my buddy Alex Lazan to talk about the U.S. Ryder Cup captain's pick situation. He's going to be joining us momentarily. And, this is one of those shows that I love doing this on an off week, because on an off week you can dive into a lot of stuff that you can't dive into during a tournament week. And it's a really fascinating situation right now because of the situation that the U.S. finds itself in. When you look at, you have a situation, that's what I'm trying to say, with the U.S., where there is not an obvious fourth choice right now. When you give that Billy Horschel pick, when you give the last second pick, it creates a really unique situation. And it creates a situation where there are a load of guys for different reasons that could be useful captain's picks and useful in different ways on a long golf course. But is Hazeltine all about that, or is Hazeltine about the other stuff? It's going to be a really interesting discussion in my mind to see where the U.S. And Davis and Tiger and the analytics guys end up on this. Because there are multiple ways to look at this. There's multiple ways to analyze this. There's multiple ways to attack this from a tactical perspective. And then there's the whole, our captain's picks overrated to begin with? So Alex and I are going to dive into that coming up here on a special Wednesday edition of Teeing It Up. He will be on his way shortly. Thursday night football tomorrow night involving the Jets. Don't forget about that. Jets-Bills, this really interesting Thursday night football game on the backs of what was a really disappointing loss for the Jets over the weekend on Sunday. I believe, a must-win. With this schedule, 0-6 is attainable, and at the same time that 0-6 is attainable, 3-3 is attainable, 4-2. There's a lot of different ways to figure out what the Jets could potentially do with an early season schedule, so we will analyze that. All that and much more is coming up on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Net Radio Network, and iTunes. We want to thank Alyssa Rose from SNY for coming on earlier this week. She was fantastic. Highly recommend the scoring position, excuse me, with ANA. Their Twitter handle is score with ANA. And they have a guest tonight, a new show tonight, dropping on KFC Radio. The KFC Radio Podcast Network and iTunes, so check that out. Search Alyssa Rose on iTunes for both the episode on this show and then her new episode with her friend Amanda Goldberg coming up tonight. I want to give a shout-out to my buddy Ryan Bounds. He's going to be with us a couple times over the next couple weeks talking Ryder Cup. He will be at Hazeltine, his first Ryder Cup. I believe it's his first Ryder Cup. So for those of you on the Golf News Net Radio Network, he is the man behind that magic, the man who posts this show on the podcast network, which is really kind of him. And we'll get to see the task force at work coming up in a couple weeks at Hazeltine. We are going to take a time out. Alex Lazon is on the other side of this break. You are listening to Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling, a special humid, hot, humid, hazy edition, 88 degrees, sky's darkening here in the swamps on Blog Talk Radio. We are back after Bob Costa says so right now.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found, because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
Just got the two-minute warning for Alex, which is always a good thing. We're back on Teeing It Up. Whoops. I hate when my apps do that. We're back on Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling on this Wednesday night. So weird. I rarely talk about my favorite TV show on this show because I just think it's weird. But Survivor, season 33 of Survivor, Gen X versus Millennials, launches a week from tonight. It's an interesting season with a Survivor first involving a meteorological event, which is this cold front that's about to come through the swamps just reminded me of it. It's really, from the promos and from the looks of it, it sounds really interesting. So I'm very anxious to see it with my own two eyes. Next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern time, only CBS, hosted, of course, by Jeff Probst. Jeff Probst, golf's never appeared on Survivor. I can't remember offhand a Survivor connection to Survivor, so that's always interesting. Maybe one day we'll get a golfer on Survivor. Golf is not a good idea for a luxury item. It's just not. What can you do with a golf club? It's just, and a golf ball can hurt somebody in a fit of frustration. So I'm not a fan of golf balls being used. People aren't a fan of golf balls being used as luxury items on Survivor, which is why we probably have not seen that. We now welcome in Alex Lazon to talk about the Ryder Cup. Hello, sir.
Hello, Jeremy. How you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Just wrapped up another beautiful day at the office and hopping on to talk Ryder Cup. We're almost there.
Yeah, and hopefully the U.S. Will have some happy moments a week from Friday. Let's start here. Let's go back a second. Way back after the 2014 debacle, we have this task force formed. Were you a fan of the task force in the first place?
It seemed like one of those political pundit moves where it's a label put on something, and I wasn't really sure exactly what the direct goals of the task force were. I like the premise of it. The idea that they're trying to create kind of a, for lack of a better word, a fraternity amongst the up-and-coming United States players to match the great bond that the European side has always brought together so well each and every Ryder Cup. So I got what they're doing on the surface. I don't know if it's going to be the payoff we're thinking, and obviously in a couple weeks' time is going to be the ultimate test. I would love to see not to get too far into the picks, but, maybe a name like a Justin Thomas would tell me that maybe the task force is operating correctly and they have the right thoughts in mind for future picks. I'm looking to see, A, you know, what comes of the final pick, but also comes of the performance. Because if the task force set out to unite American golfers and get everyone a little bit closer, and we come up with another, you know, debacle loss at the hands of the European team on home turf, then there's going to be questions. At first, though, Jeremy, I was just more confused than anything. I wouldn't say I was or wasn't a fan.
Yeah, it's you know, some people did think it was a stark overreaction to everything that happened during the Tom Watson era. And I think it's easy to forget that if Hunter Mahan doesn't flub a chip, the U.S. may win the 2010 Ryder Cup. And if the and if a historic comeback doesn't happen in 2012, the U.S. wins that one. So it is highly conceivable that the 2010 and or 2012 Ryder Cups could have flipped either way, which just shows you that some people think that this task force thing is overdone. You know, what you said there is fascinating because, and just to skip ahead to the end for a second, we have Ricky, JB, and Matt Kuchar as the three captains picks, and obviously we will dive into each of them coming up. But this fourth pick is out there. It will be made next Sunday night after the Tour Championship at halftime of Sunday Night Football on NBC. So that's a corporate synergy there. And the glaring name that has not come up yet, obviously, in terms of making the team on points and or those first three picks, was Bubba Watson. Here's a guy who loves playing for his country, embraced the whole Friday first tee thing. And there has been talk amongst many guys and pundits who you hear on TV that he does not have many friends in the team room. And that if this task force movement is about bonding and chemistry and enjoying the company of who you're with, then maybe Bubba Watson does not fit that bill. So what's your take on this perspective by some that there's no chance Bubba's the fourth pick because Bubba is not the right personality for the room?
Yeah, I mean, obviously speaking on his personality, you know, there's always been that kind of level of animosity between, I would say, the public and Bubba Watson. There's lots of fascinating things he does on the course. There's lots of flamboyant outgoing things he does on and off the course. And there's a lot of humanizing factors that make you appreciate Bubba Watson. Experiences like seeing him really embrace the mode of the Olympics and what that all entailed and embracing that entire week was very enlightening. But with that being said, outside of Ricky Fowler, there's not a lot of people, as I look through the U.S. roster, that I think right now would give you a lot of pleasant Bubba Watson stories on the golf course. So that being said, when we're talking about the task force, the goal at the very end of the day is to put the best 12 golfers out there for the United States team that are going to give them a better chance to win more consistently, for that matter. But when you look at Bubba Watson, 0-3 in Ryder Cup singles and a horrible record across the board. So, again, I'm harping back to that. If the task force wants to be that body that's making the leap and making the change to the next generation and maybe the change to a new type of golfer for the Ryder Cup, maybe it's kind of a little bit of a gut punch, but maybe leaving Bubba off is the move. And like I said earlier, maybe it's reaching for a guy like a Justin Thomas or Daniel Berger that's younger, World Golf Championship experience, both PGA Tour winners and a lot to look forward to from them. Unfortunately, though Bubba's career is arguably in his prime, we haven't got a lot of great results from him in the Ryder Cup. As much as he loves being there, his performance hasn't matched his enthusiasm. So,
and I would argue good performances, period. His game this year has been not close to its best, and he's extremely inconsistent. And as you said on 60 Minute Sports and said elsewhere, he's one of those guys that when you, you know, that just walks into any given event and comes to a determination on if he likes it or not by Tuesday. And I've never understood it. I've never – he psyched himself out of so many different events, going back to the long drive at the PGA and all that other stuff. And I just – he's got such a weird makeup and he's so hard to read. But I don't like his 2016 form, period, which I think further aids this notion of maybe he's not the best pick. Now, speaking of guys who are not on good form, Ricky Fowler's not on very good form either. He won way, way, way earlier this year and has really had a lackluster 2016, had a couple chances to win and let them slide, most notably and most recently at the Barclays. And here we are now. He becomes the first pick. A lot of people thought he was a surefire thing. He's a fantastic partner for Jimmy Walker. But his form hasn't been best. And while I personally thought that that was a pick you had to make, there are some that are not happy with that pick and think he should have been left off.
Right, agreed, Jeremy. And one of the other things that come up when you say that is it's difficult to say – it's hard to not pick Ricky and then immediately follow that up with it's easy to not pick Bubba, because if you look at the last, you know, few Ryder Cups, those two kind of go hand in hand. They're, you know, to the public eye and the golfing fan in the United States, they're the golf boys. They're the outgoing faces with the pink and orange drivers and the bright clothing that light up TV cameras every weekend and bring in much bigger crowds towards PGA Tour galleries and attendances. So, It's definitely a catch-22 with those two guys, because to a certain degree, I feel like they almost kind of go hand-in-hand in the way they've come up and developed their games together. So it is interesting, this idea that, you know, maybe Ricky is part of that group, and maybe going forward, Bubba Watson is just not simply a fit for that future group. It's interesting to see kind of how these generations go in and out, and, you know, you compare, you know, what Europe did, you know, in the past, you remember them having the stalwarts, and they did a great job with their captain's picks of not only keeping stalwarts, but adding a young gun in Thomas Peters. So I'm interested to see, in regards to the U.S., if they're able to mirror any of what Europe did this year, and hopefully that equates to a slightly better performance as well.
Yeah, now Matt Kuchar doesn't have a win this year, which is extremely unlike Matt Kuchar. However, he did win the bronze medal on Sunday at the Olympics, shooting 63. I don't think that, or I personally don't have a problem with him on the team. Many issues from you having Kuchar on this team?
Not particularly. Like, usually when I break down these 12-man rosters and I think about pairings for, you know, Friday and whatnot, I kind of look at, you know, I kind of look and see if each team has at least three or four just straight smooth swingers, just guys that are going to get you your fairway, get you your green. They're not going to, you know, necessarily light it up, but they're going to keep you in play in foursomes and four-ball matches. So, you know, when I look at the U.S. team, I obviously look at Zach Johnson as a straight smooth swinger. I look at Cooch as one of those guys, and I look at Jimmy Walker as one of those guys with his recent form as well. You know, another person who still gets kind of thrown around loosely in the captain's pick conversation that was always kind of that stalwart in terms of the consistency guy is Jim Furyk, who is definitely kind of on the latter end, but he's had a couple of highlights obviously this year with the 58 and amazing performance that day. So that's just something to think about when I look at the roster. In terms of Kuchar selection, though, I think he fits well into that mold, and he's a good complement for a lot of players on the team.
And then when there's J.B. Holmes, the powerful hitter who's really had a nice season, and I have no problem with him being a pick either. I thought that, you know, look, there's some people saying that Hazeltine's long and you need someone like him. Some are saying, no, it'll be about the short game inside of 100 yards and putting. But, you know, he's somebody that with his length, you know, is a nice best ball guy, because you can put him with somebody like Kuchar who's a shorter player and they can match nicely. You can send him out there, and I'm confident because he won back in 08. He's one of the few guys that has tasted what victory is like. So I didn't have a problem with him. What was your take when it came to J.B. Holmes?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting pick, but I like it because of his consistency in play this year. Just like you said, you know, And here's the thing that you really got to look back at. If we're really going and we're digging very deeply on these statistics, we're looking at the fact that he's 1-0 in Ryder Cup play. And I know he doesn't have a ton of experience in the Ryder Cup, but he's done decent in match plays past as well. And it just shows me that I think they're just looking to get guys who are familiar and comfortable with the situation recently. And J.B. Holmes has the experience. He's the kind of personality that he's not going to get too flustered in a moment like that. He's a grip it and rip it guy. And if he's paired off nicely with a ball striker, you know, like a Zach Johnson or a Kucher, I think it works very well, you know. And then you complement, you know, power players like J.B. Holmes and Dustin Johnson with those accurate, you know, striper guys that hit in the middle of the fairway. I think those are the type of matchup problems that you need to present for the European team, because they have a lot of that consistency across the board.
Talking with my powerhouse Lazan about the Ryder Cup. So you want Justin Thomas for that fourth pick, huh?
I do. Yeah, I do. There's just something about his game and what he's been able to do the last year or two, you know, really digging up. Obviously, I think, you know, in my eyes, a couple of years ago, he kind of lived under the shadow of Jordan Spieth. He was referred to a while by myself as that guy who was Jordan Spieth's friend and played golf with him growing up. But now he really has made a name for himself as someone who could be the future of American golf alongside names like Ricky and Brooks Koepka, who we'll see in a couple weeks as well, and Patrick Reed. So, it's a combination of his ball striking. Also, his FedEx Cup performance has been very well recently. Obviously, his win was last year, but it still counts towards Ryder Cup points. So that's a big factor for him being just even
considered.
Here's
the thing about
that. He's just a hair outside, like, I believe, the top 20 or 25. But he talked about this end over end and to no avail how much he's interested in playing. And I think the Spieth-Thomas pairing is something I want to see, just like I wanted to see the Spieth-Patrick Reed pairing a couple years ago, and I thought that worked out pretty well overall. I would love to see him get this opportunity. I think it would introduce people to a very likable, consistent golfer that I think a lot of the American public golfing audience doesn't realize has the credentials that he does.
Well, here's the thing about Justin. The fall win, because of Phil Mickelson's passionate, persuasive speech that the fall event should not count for points, did not count. If you count Justin Thomas's win at CIMB from last year, he would have made the team on points. So that's the interesting thing about that. And Davis Love has said he does realize that and has kept that in the back of his head. Here's my question. What's your take on the guy who most people have most places that I've seen think that he would be a better pick than Bubba Watson, and that's Daniel Berger, who got the win this year, who has played well, who has played consistent, and a lot of people think he's the right young blood and not Justin Thomas to replace Bubba as the fourth captain's pick. What's your take on Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's a lot of the same. It's a lot of the same compliments I'd issue out to Justin Thomas as well, but I'd give to Daniel Berger. I got an opportunity to watch him in person earlier this year at the match play here in Austin, and watched him play a really tight match against Phil Mickelson as well. This was the infamous week where they had the beautiful slow motion video of his backswing hitting up against a rock wall and him completely whiffing on the ball. But besides that, he played a very close match against Phil Mickelson. And one of the things I noticed about him is that he is just a cool customer. Doesn't have a lot of reaction in the moment. And I love the way that he goes about his game. It seems like he's someone that would love to be in the environment. And one cool connection that I did just read about as well is that his father actually played as a tennis player in the Davis Cup. So I believe this might be some sort of first to have a Davis Cup, Ryder Cup, father-son combo in the works if Berger does get that last captain's pick.
You literally read my mind. That's what I was literally just about to say. That, you know, some people, including Tim Rosefort, who was the first to extensively write about this whole Jay Berger influence on Daniel's life, has said that if there's anybody on this team who's a rookie that has seen anything close to what a Ryder Cup is like in terms of representing your country, then that becomes and that person basically is Daniel Berger. So let's now flip to the guys who qualified on points. Who are you most confident in and are least concerned about, and who right now gives you the most concern for the U.S. guys who made it on points?
That's a great question. So I guess, you know, I'm gonna go with a couple guys who I've seen play well recently. I would, in terms of confidence, you obviously have to put Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed right up there. I feel very confident in Spieth's ability to get it done in match play. Had great experience not only in college but in the last Ryder Cup as well. And I would say those are a few names that I put right up there. Obviously, Phil's a stalwart. He's getting up there. His game doesn't necessarily have the consistency that it used to, but the beauty of some of these match play formats is he doesn't necessarily have to put together an 18-hole round like he does in a normal tournament. So if you put him in the right environment and give him the right types of shots, Phil could be a huge contributor to this team as well still, despite his age. Another guy I would reference as well is Jimmy Walker to round that group out, just because not only has he been just consistent as hell, but he is a sneaky long player who's also very accurate. It's very hard to come by these days, but I would put those guys in the group of my reliables. And then, you know, maybe if I'm working into a less reliable, that's when you go into these captain's picks and your players like a Snedeker or Koepka who don't quite have the experience. You know, you've seen them in some match play environments before, but obviously the Ryder Cup's a different animal, so they'd probably be my tier two.
And for me, I have full confidence when it comes to DJ and Patrick. Those guys are playing well. Jordan, if you remember, Jordan last year had a poor first three playoff events and then really ramped it up at the Tour Championship and obviously played well there to win the whole thing. So I'm not concerned about him. I'm concerned about Phil just because Phil's been so inconsistent. I'm a little bit concerned about Snedeker solely because Snedeker hasn't popped up on a leaderboard in some time. I think he'll be fine. I just want to make sure that his game's on target. And, Mr. Walker should be fine. And then for me, as long as Koepka's ankle is fine, I have no problem with him. I'm very concerned about Ricky, and I'm very concerned about Zach Johnson. Zach Johnson, I hated when he made the equipment switch. He has not won this year. He's looked okay. He's crept up a little bit. But for me, I have not seen the regular Zach Johnson that I've seen in past years this year. And that slightly concerns me. And Ricky, I just want to see consistency out of Ricky. And obviously he, and he was a pick, obviously. But I'm a little concerned about him. I just want to make sure he's okay.
Absolutely. And you know, Ricky is my boy. We go way back, but we really need the 2015 Ricky Fowler at this Ryder Cup and not this year's Ryder Cup. If we could just possibly erase the last 9 months or so, that'd be just golden.
Yeah. And you know, look, I sound like someone's concerned dad, but I want the U.S. to win this thing so bad. And I just want to make sure that these guys, because when you're out in the task force and when you're so into it, you know, it's like that first date. You know, you plan it so hard, you think about it so much, you put so much of your time and effort into it that you don't want to overthink it. I just want to make sure that come Friday morning, the U.S. team is actually chill and not so hyped and so into it that they get out there and actually try too hard. Because as Tiger showed us, when you try too hard, bad things happen.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I will comment on is I think there's a stark contrast between the 2014 captain Tom Watson and 2016 captain Davis Love. Obviously, I think Davis Love is that type of captain to bring that stability, that calm, cool, collected personality. I think he is of a much younger generation and of a much more much higher relatability factor to this group of players. I think that was one of the big issues that was maybe, you know, spoken about a lot at the time in 2014, is that there's a big gap between, you know, the era and generation that Watson grew up in versus Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed. So, you know, when I look at Davis Love, I see a guy that is still active in playing and a recently winner on the PGA Tour as well. So let's not forget he won, I believe, what was it, at 50 or 51 years old. So this is a guy who not only has the relatability factor to this roster, but, you know, to look at your captain as a Ryder Cup player and know that he has been out there on tour with you and got it done recently and in the past often, I think that's it's a nice confidence booster for the players themselves to remind them that this is a guy that's on their side and he's by their side regularly. So I think the comfortability will help there.
And for me too, and I totally am with you on that. We've barely talked about the Europeans, but I believe on paper this is a better team than the Europeans. I believe on paper that the Europeans have some guys, because that team is a very young team. They've got, what, 5 rookies, I think it is. And that's a
Correct.
Team where if somebody gets overwhelmed by the moment, take someone like Matthew Fitzpatrick, somebody gets overwhelmed by the moment, you've got some issues built into that team. And guys like Lee Westwood and Martin Keimer, who are there for their leadership, but not so much there because their golf game has been perfectly on fire. This team needs Paul Casey. That whole controversy, I think, will really hurt them. And I think that this is a European team that on paper, if there was a year for the U.S. to beat the Europeans, purely because of recent golf results, this is the year. I don't like this European team on paper.
Yeah, I will say there's definitely some questionable results recently. I think there, players like Danny Willett gone a little bit missing since his Masters victory. Did win over the summer, but potentially could succumb to some of that Ryder Cup pressure early as a youngin. And again, you know, we're going to find out about Rafa Cabrera-Bello. I watched him a lot at the week here in Austin. He had a great run in the match play, finishing
yep.
third as well, beating Rory in that semifinal. He was very poised in his victories all the way through that bracket. It's interesting to see him, and it'll be interesting to see him in a Ryder Cup environment, which is obviously, you know, the amount of pressure of the WGC match play times a million. And the one guy that I'm really going to be focused in on, Jeremy, on the European team is Thomas Peters. This is a guy who I've been watching for a year or two now and got to see him have a match and sink a great putt at the match play in Austin to have a match with Adam Scott, you know, with a big crowd
yeah.
around. And you tell what it meant to him on that international stage. And I think it's a preview of things to come. I think this is a guy we're going to see in a lot of Ryder Cups. He's already won, I believe, at least 2 or 3 times now on the European Tour just recently in the past month. So he's got good form, but again, he's going to be a question mark because of his inexperience on the international stage.
Thomas Peters is so talented and has such a good game and swing. And the thing to remember too about him, he's playing for his country. Belgium has had such a tough 2016. It's a country that people are scared to visit right now because of terrorism fears. And I said this back at the Olympics, that if there's one thing that unites countries that are polarized or going through tragedies, it's sports. And Thomas Peters has a chance, I think, at the Ryder Cup to really put a positive face on Belgium. And that would be fantastic to see for Belgium. And also, one more thing about that country. Sorry about that team, which is Danny Willett has 0 top 10 since the Masters. So that's something to watch out for.
It is 0. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Henrik Stenson is hurt. Henrik Stenson has a foot injury that's not affecting his golf game, but is making it painful to walk. He is withdrawn from a couple playoff events because of it. He says he's going to play. No, sorry, he actually fell out of the top 30. He's not in the Tour Championship, so he gets another week off. But, can he go 36 the first 2 days and play 5 matches if need be, which Europe may need him to do? That's a big question mark. He's the biggest, you know, I personally think the U.S. can, if Kepka's ankle flares up, I think they can afford to have that happen. I don't think Europe can afford to lose Henrik Stenson.
Yeah, so with any luck, Kepka's ankle is a go, and Henrik Stenson's foot isn't. And, you know, if you're only getting two, maybe three matches out of Stenson total, that opens up the door for more opportunities to beat, you know, fresher opponents like an Andy Sullivan or a Chris Wood, who may be a little bit less impressionable to the European squad.
This conversation has gone 25 minutes, and I have not asked you the single most important question. So I will ask that question right now. Who will be the better vice captain, Tiger Woods or Ian Poulter?
Ooh, what a hot take question that is. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm probably going to give you Ian Poulter as the answer. I'm going to say that mainly because I think Ian Poulter has more experience embracing the team atmosphere and a lot more experience winning Ryder Cups. So though I love seeing Tiger on the sidelines, driving the cart around, he's going to be in the team room, and I think he's going to be invaluable for those Thursday
yep.
night, Friday night, Saturday night team room speeches. I think as a day-to-day vice captain, I think Poulter may present more for his team, but it will be a very interesting thing to see Tiger Woods driving around in a golf cart all weekend, not swinging a club, watching a golf tournament. I can't say I've ever seen that before, Aaron.
So Poulter will drive a cart much better than Tiger. There you go. You heard the most important question here first, folks. Who will be the better vice captain? And, hey, Davis Love III said flat out, we've never had a superstar driving a cart like this, and the U.S. team's going to have to be careful. This is what Davis said in where they put Tiger and how they move Tiger, because merely him standing there with sunglasses on watching golf will cause a ruckus, and they need to be very careful that Tiger's mere cart movements does not impact anybody actually playing a match.
You'd like to think that there's enough Ryder Cup staffers to make the logistics of that work, but you never know. The crowd get pretty crazy out there.
Hey, coming through. It's a Tiger on a cart coming through. Final thing, who wins the Ryder Cup?
Oh, well, I do think that Hazeltine is the right venue for this to happen. I think, however, I'm going to have to give you the bolder of my two bold picks in that if the U.S. does indeed win, which I'll predict they will, it may have to be going away. I'm not sure if it's going to get done in a last match scenario on a Sunday evening or, you know, God forbid a Monday or something crazy happens. So I'm going to go with the U.S. We'll take them by a point or two. Say they get to about 15 total. That'll be my prediction.
That's an interesting point that you just raised, and I will quickly look up the Long Range Weather Channel 15-day forecast for Shasta, Minnesota.
Yes,
because I have no life.
The famous home of Austin, Texas's own Rich Beam's major championship.
There you go. Right now, as people know, the Ryder Cup starts Friday, September 30th, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Golf Channel. The furthest this forecast goes out is Wednesday, September 28th. And on Wednesday, September 28th, it will be partly cloudy, it will be windy, and the high temperature will be 64, and the low temperature will be 44. And the long range goes from the current temperature of 70 and the projected high, for example, this weekend and next week of 82 in 2 weeks, all the way down to the 60s and lows in the 40s. If that transition happens, you know, this changes the game. The ball flat out does not fly as far when it gets cooler. So that would be a game changer.
It does. I don't love that those temperatures either. That sounds like a European tour weather forecast you just read me.
Yeah, and since so many of these guys like Andy Sullivan and Peters and Chris Wood are guys who play that tour predominantly and are used to this, you know, that could be obviously a big impact. Alex, thanks, as always, for coming on Teeing It Up. By the way, I do think the U.S. will win. I think it'll be very close. I think all of us sitting in our 72-degree houses will be sweating. It'll be that tight.
Yeah, look forward to it, Jeremy. It should be a good one.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
All right, have a good one. Bye.
Yep. That is Alex Lazon. Thank you for listening to Teeing It Up. We are back on Monday. I'll go back to being on the same day eventually. Back on Monday for more Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. Have a great night, everybody. Take care.